Today is Monday, May 24th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, humanitarian and medical aid pour into Gaza.
We got to the result thanks to President Biden's relentless focus on this quiet but I think effective diplomacy.
Plus, India passes a grim milestone as COVID kills over 300,000.
The country is trying desperately to save its scarce supply of vaccines by delaying shots for those who have recovered from the disease.
Also, thousands flee DRC volcano eruption. Our top story today is in the Middle East. A 130-truck convoy with humanitarian aid and medical supplies began entering Gaza from Egypt on Sunday. Trucks crossed into the territory some 2 days after an Egyptian brokered ceasefire between Israel and Palestinian militant groups ended an 11-day war. The Ministry of Public Works and Housing said that 769 housing and commercial units were rendered uninhabitable. At least 1,042 units in 258 buildings were destroyed, and just over 14,500 units suffered minor damage. The United Nations said about 800,000 people in Gaza do not have regular access to clean piped water, as nearly 50% of the water network was damaged in the fighting. The ceasefire between Israel and Hamas over Gaza continues as the conflict puts a spotlight on U.S. President Joe Biden's approach to international challenges. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports.
The ceasefire marked the first major foreign policy crisis for U.S. President Joe Biden and shed a light on his approach in handling global hotspots. During the 11 days of fighting, Biden supported Israel publicly, but reportedly worked behind the scenes with Egyptian negotiators and Israel to push for an end to the hostilities. Anthony Blinken is the U.S. Secretary of State.
We got to the result thanks to President Biden's relentless focus on this quiet but I think effective diplomacy in getting to a ceasefire and stopping the violence in 11 days.
Biden's efforts occurred as the Israeli aerial and artillery campaign left 248 people dead in Gaza, which is controlled by the militant group Hamas and is part of Palestinian territory. More than 4,000 rockets fired from Gaza into Israel killed 13. Biden has come under pressure from members of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party who want the administration to take a harder line with Israel and do more to support the Palestinians. They are concerned about the United States selling arms to Israel, in particular, a pending shipment worth $735 million. Secretary Blinken, who is heading to the Middle East this week, says Biden is committed to Israel having the means to defend itself, but congressional input is important on the arms sale.
Any arms sale is going to be done in full consultation with Congress. We're committed to that, and we want to make sure that that process works effectively.
Republicans point to the role of Iranian-funded Hamas in Gaza. They have also expressed concern that the Biden administration would lift sanctions against Iran in an effort to persuade Tehran to return to compliance with a 2015 nuclear accord. The deal is aimed at reining in the Islamic Republic's nuclear program, which Iran maintains is for peaceful purposes. Blinken later told CNN a return to the nuclear deal could be a stepping stone to addressing Iran's support for terrorism. Susan Collins is a Republican senator.
That's the key reason why I don't want us to proceed with lifting sanctions on Iran as long as Iran remains the foremost supporter of terrorism in the world.
In 2018, then-President Donald Trump withdrew from the deal and imposed new sanctions on Tehran. He said the deal did not do enough to stop objectionable Iranian behavior. A year later, Iran began exceeding the deal's nuclear activity limits. Biden said the U.S. will work with the United Nations to provide humanitarian assistance to Gaza and help with reconstruction. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken travels on Monday to the Middle East to discuss ways to solidify the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas and reduce the risk of new violence. The State Department said Monday morning he will meet with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, and King Abdullah II of Jordan. Western leaders decried the diversion of a commercial plane to Belarus, to arrest Roman Petrosevich. A Belarusian fighter was scrambled to escort the plane. Charles de la Desma from the Associated Press reports.
While Western leaders decry Belarus's move as an act of piracy and terrorism, Slovakia-based analyst Alina Kutsko suggests the Belarusian authorities are provoking a new wave of tension with the opposition and the wider region.
This is a totally new level of escalation and a totally new level of risk that the government is willing to take.
The EU and others are demanding a probe into the dramatic forced landing of the Ryanair jet at Minsk and Roman Protasevich's removal from the plane. He ran a popular messaging app that's played a key role in helping organise massive protests against Belarus's authoritarian president. I'm Charles de la Desma.
The White House is springing back to life now that people are vaccinated and with the recent relaxation in federal guidelines about wearing masks and distancing. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
Let me invite the family up. Come on.
There's a new vibe at the White House of late. Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
We are a warm and fuzzy crew, and we like to hug around here. But we were waiting for that to be allowed by CDC guidelines, which we certainly abide by.
Come on up and say hi.
Yes, hugs are now in, masks mostly out. The complex is taking on the look and feel of pre-pandemic days, with more West Wing staffers on the premises, soon more reporters.
And certainly continuing to open the White House up, the People's House up to the American public.
The White House is eager to send a message that a return to normal is possible with vaccinations. But President Biden's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, says it's not irrational to be apprehensive.
You can understand that when people have been following a certain trend for a considerable period of time, that it may take time for them to adjust. So I would not say that that's irrational. I'd say that's understandable.
Ben Thomas, Washington.
India's overall death toll from COVID-19 crossed 300,000 on Monday, as it reported 4,454 deaths over the last 24 hours. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
India's total COVID-19 death toll crossed 300,000 on Monday. The country is trying desperately to save its scarce supply of vaccines by delaying shots for those who have recovered from the disease. The head of a government panel said on Sunday, those who have had the disease should wait 3 months before receiving a vaccine, instead of the prior 1 month recommendation. Under scrutiny for his handling of the world's worst rise in coronavirus cases, Prime Minister Narendra Modi made all adults eligible for vaccination earlier this month. Meanwhile, the capital Delhi will start relaxing its strict lockdown if new cases continue to drop, the chief minister said. Delhi has been under lockdown since April 20th, but daily cases have declined in recent weeks after peaking on May 9th. Other states remain in lockdown, including Jammu and Kashmir in the north, where door-to-door style testing has been ramped up in rural areas. The world's largest vaccine-producing nation has fully vaccinated just over 41 million people as of Sunday, around just 4% of its population.
That's Libby Hogan of Reuters. The city that never sleeps is finally staying up after 14 months of being mostly closed for indoor dining due to the coronavirus. No other city in the United States was hit as hard as New York, and the Big Apple's nightlife reopening is a sign of hope for many worldwide. VOA's Tina Tritt reports.
There was lots to celebrate on a recent Friday night in New York City. For the first weekend since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, bars and restaurants opened with no mask restrictions for vaccinated people.
We got hit pretty hard during the pandemic, so it's great to see everyone's out, everyone's friendly, everyone's having fun.
Other milestones? Indoor dining is now allowed at 100% capacity, and the subways have resumed 24-hour service. It was a big difference from a year ago when Christina Albert moved to the city.
It was a ghost town, and to see New York City come back to life, especially Midtown and the Theater District, I am super excited.
Inside this Hell's Kitchen restaurant, Daniel Arcia, a teacher, had some choice words for those who skipped town.
I just want to say that all the people who left New York, suckers, we are back.
More than 3.4 million New Yorkers, about 41%, are fully vaccinated with a coronavirus vaccine.
The beauty of New York is like we're still wearing masks when it's necessary, we are trying to balance, you know, like having fun and taking care of each other.
Junildo Rosario is the co-owner of All Star Sports Bar.
It's starting to feel a little bit more normal, so we're happy to see that. It's definitely from like lonely to back to, you know, having family in your living room.
For Anton Derrett, chef and owner of Filipino restaurant Tradition, the timing couldn't be better.
We opened up a week before the lockdown in 2020, and we were forced to shut down our doors.
On this night, there was an hour wait for a table.
I got a full table right here. I got a line outside the door, people walking by, you know. The energy of New York is coming back.
I'm thankful that it's coming back. My bar is thankful it's coming back. My staff is definitely thankful it's coming back.
Jarrett Major, general manager of Bar 9, had improvised with outdoor seating and stages for the live music venue. But on this night, it felt like old times. Over at Cuban restaurant Guantanamera, owner Mario Zarate was also tending to a full house.
I never doubted that New York will come back. New York going to rebound, and it could be better than before.
After more than a year of restrictions, New Yorkers are once again proving they're the city that never sleeps. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
The Australian government has been urged to offer citizens cash and lottery tickets as incentives to boost slow rates of COVID-19 vaccinations. Public health and advertising experts say more needs to be done to counter mounting hesitancy and confusion about a mass inoculation program. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Research commissioned by two Australian newspapers found a third of respondents don't intend to get vaccinated soon. There are community-wide doubts about potential side effects of vaccines. The survey has also shown that many Australians believe there's no rush to receive a dose, while the country's international borders remain closed. Demand for injections has been far lower than expected. At the current pace of about 500,000 doses a week, Australia's adult population wouldn't be fully vaccinated until October 2022. But the authorities are warning that complacency can kill, pointing to the resurgence of this deadly virus in countries like Taiwan, Singapore and South Korea, which, like Australia, had appeared to have suppressed community spread of COVID-19. Australia's federal government recently responded to hesitancy about the vaccines with a new public health campaign.
COVID-19 vaccines continue to roll out to those most at risk. People aged 50 and over can now have the vaccine. It's voluntary, free, and the best way to protect you and your community. Our therapeutic...
Experts believe that offering Australians lottery tickets or cash after being vaccinated could boost injection rates. Similar measures, along with free beer and donuts, have been used in other countries, including the United States, where critics said vaccine payments might unfairly exploit people who've lost jobs during the pandemic. A major incentive for Australians could be linked to overseas travel. Officials have said the reopening of international borders, which have been closed for more than a year, could be dependent on high rates of coronavirus vaccinations. Julian Savulescu is a bioethicist at the Murdoch's Children's Research Institute in Melbourne. He says Australians need to be actively encouraged to get the jab.
You can provide them with things that clearly are benefits to them, such as cash or kind. So kind being, you know, greater ability to travel, not having to wear masks in certain situations. So the US has dropped mask requirements for people who have been vaccinated, or provide them with cash, you know, and money does talk, and it may well influence significant numbers of people.
Tough border control measures, strict lockdowns and mass testing have helped Australia to contain COVID-19. Cases of community transmission are now rare, but on Monday, state health authorities in Victoria reported two likely positive cases in the city of Melbourne. Australia has diagnosed over 30,000 coronavirus infections since the pandemic began, and 910 people have died, according to the latest government statistics. Regulators have so far approved two vaccines for use in Australia, the Pfizer-BioNTech treatment and the Oxford-AstraZeneca drug. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Fighters opposed to Myanmar's military junta fought with troops in the East of the country on Sunday and claimed to have killed more than 13 members of the security forces, in addition to capturing four and raising a police station, local media said. The fighting near the border of southern Shan and Kaya states was the latest in a resurgence of conflict in parts of the Southeast Asian country since the coup that overthrew the elected party of Aung San Suu Kyi. International Edition's host Steve Miller spoke with reporter Cape Diamond in Yangon for more detail.
We're hearing the continuous explosion and, of course, the shootings in different cities and different states in the country. And the last one is the one that in Mopye, which is in southern Shan State, and which is, of course, in between the Shan State and Kaya State. So the local defense force, we call it People Defense Force. And according to the local media report, 15 members of the troops killed and the four captured alive by the local force. At the same time, you know, not only in that region, but also in the other different area of the country is having the fighting between the People Defense Force and the State Administration Council, the military troops. And they have seized a bunch of the weapon as well, according to the local report.
These are local reports based on information from the People's Defense Forces and other groups. What has the military junta said in response to these latest reports?
Well, so far as we know, that there has been no response, official response from the junta on these specific cases on their state media. You know, they have been spreading the news about cases that they have been detained, and mostly the ones that, you know, they detained for relating to the explosion cases in the cities like Yangon and Mandalay. So in terms of this specific case, we don't really see any, response from the junta yet.
Over the weekend, the military junta said that it is considering revoking the registration of the National League for Democracy Party, the party of Aung San Suu Kyi and President Win Myint. Have they been able to produce proof to support their allegations?
You know, they have found the election fraud, and they have a number of the cases that being allegedly accused the National League for Democracy is cheating, you know, the election. And they have been, you know, announcing their own results, what they have based on what they have found. But what they have found are not being independently confirmed by the, you know, independent organization or the independent, you know, election observer.
That's reporter Cape Diamond speaking with my colleague Steve Miller from Yangon. An inquiry is set to begin on Monday to look into the cause of a cable car accident that left 14 dead and seriously injured a child. The accident occurred on Sunday when a cable car linking Italy's Lake Maggiore with a nearby mountain in the Alps plunged 20 meters to the ground, local officials and rescuers said. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
More than a dozen people died and at least three were seriously injured in Italy on Sunday when a cable car linking Lake Maggiore with a nearby mountain in the Alps plunged to the ground. The Stresa Matarone cable car carries tourists and local people from the town of Stresa, almost 1,400 meters above sea level, to the top of Matarone Mountain. Marcella Severino, Stresa's mayor, told a national broadcaster that the accident happened as the cable car was traveling up the mountain. The cabin dropped some 20 meters and rolled several times down the steep slopes before it was stopped by trees. Coroners had started identifying the victims, who included foreign nationals, she said, without giving further details. A spokesperson for Italy's Alpine Rescue Service told a local broadcaster that two children had been transported by helicopter to a pediatric hospital in the nearby northern city of Turin. The Stresa Matarone lift had only recently reopened following the gradual lifting of coronavirus restrictions. Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi voiced his condolences to the families of the victims with a special thought for the wounded children.
That's Soraya Ali of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. The head of International Atomic Energy Agency says Iran has agreed to a one-month extension to an agreement on surveillance cameras at nuclear sites. Speaking at a news conference Monday in Vienna, IAEA Director General Rafael Mariano Grossi told journalists that came after a discussion with Ali Ahmad Salehi, the head of Iran's civil nuclear program. The International Criminal Court prosecutor opened a hearing on Monday of evidence against an alleged leader of a notorious militia blamed for atrocities in Darfur, calling him, quote, willing and energetic perpetrator of crimes in the conflict-torn region of Sudan in 2003 to 2004. Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda's comment come at the start of the first presentation at the Global Court of Evidence against a suspect charged with involvement in crimes by the Janjaweed militia in Darfur. The hearing is to determine if there's enough evidence against Ali Mohammed Ali Abdurrahman Ali, known as Ali Kushab, to try him at the ICC. The United States is restricting visas for people accused of undermining efforts to resolve the deadly fighting in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Other U.S. actions linked to the crisis include wide-ranging restrictions on the economy and security assistance to Ethiopia. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken says it's time for the international community to take action. The six-month-old conflict has sparked allegations of ethnic cleansing and fears of famine. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Ending the COVID-19 pandemic and preventing future pandemics is expected to dominate discussions during this week's 74th World Health Assembly, decision-making body of the World Health Organization. This session would also address other pressing global health issues. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The 2021 World Health Assembly will be held virtually. This, in and of itself, is aimed at sending a strong message that it still is not safe for large groups of people to gather physically. More than 2,750 people so far have registered to attend the virtual event. WHO declared the COVID-19 outbreak a pandemic and a global international public health emergency on March 11, 2020. Since then, COVID-19 cases have increased 40-fold to 162 million, including more than 3.3 million deaths. Discussions on a so-called pandemic treaty to better prepare for and prevent global infectious outbreaks is expected to take center stage at the Global Assembly. WHO Chief Legal Officer Stephen Solomon says drafting a treaty would be a long process. He says delegates have not decided whether negotiations on a treaty should be started. He says the legally binding pandemic convention would cover both substantive issues, which include equitable sharing of materials, such as vaccines and diagnoses, and structural ones.
Structurally, the elements that often comes up is issues of enforcement mechanisms, compliance mechanisms, monitoring mechanisms, incentives and disincentives. There's clearly issues of governance, how that would work under treaty institutions and financing.
The Assembly will face the largest agenda ever over the coming 8 days, with more than 72 global health issues under examination. Questions of vaccine equity will be central to these discussions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mahbub Yabaro, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.